Chapter 31. Mashiara. As the boat swept away from the landing, Nynaeve tossed her mask down beside her on the cushioned bench and slumped back with arms folded and braid gripped firmly, scowling at nothing, scowling at everything. Listening to the wind still told her a fierce storm was on the way, the kind that tore off roofs and flattened barns, and she almost wished the river would begin to kick up in waves right that minute.
"If it isn't the weather, Nynaeve," she mimicked, "then you should be the one to go. The mistress of the ships might be insulted if we didn't send the strongest of us. They know Aes Sedai put great store in that." "Bah!"
That had been Elaine, except for the "bah." Elaine just thought putting up with any amount of nonsense from Marilla would be preferable to facing Nesta again. Once you began badly with someone, it was hard to recover. Matt Cawthon was proof enough of that. And if they had gotten off any worse with Nesta Din Rea's two moons, she would be sending the lot of them to fetch and carry. "Horrible woman," she grumbled, shifting around on the seat cushions. Avienda had been no better when Nynaeve suggested she go to the sea folk. Those people had been fascinated by her. She pitched her voice high and finicky, not at all like Avienda's, but the mood fit.
"We will learn of this trouble when we learn, Nynaeve Almira. Perhaps I will learn something watching Jakim Cardine today."
If not for the fact that nothing whatsoever frightened the Aiel woman, she would have thought Avienda fearful from her eagerness to spy on Cardine. A day standing in a hot street jostled by crowds was not amusing, and today would be worse with the festival. Nynaeve would have thought the woman would enjoy a nice, refreshing boat ride. The boat lurched. A nice, refreshing boat ride, she told herself. Nice, cool breezes on the bay. Moist breezes, not dry. The boat rolled. "Oh, blood and ashes," she moaned. Appalled, she clapped a hand over her mouth and drummed her heels against the front of the bench in righteous outrage. If she had to endure those sea folk for long, she would have as much filth coming off of her tongue as Matt did. She did not want to think about him. One more day folding her hands for that man, and she would yank every hair out of her head. Not that he had demanded anything unreasonable so far, but she kept waiting for him to, and his manner. "No," she said firmly. "I want to settle my stomach, not rile it." The boat had begun a slow rocking. She tried to concentrate on her clothes. She was not fixated on clothes, the way Elaine sometimes seemed to be, but thinking about silks and laces was soothing. Everything had been chosen to impress the mistress of the ships, to try regaining a little lost ground, for all the good it might do. Green silk slashed with yellow in the skirts, embroidered in gold down the sleeves and across the bodice, with golden lace along the hem and at her wrists, and just bordering the neckline. Perhaps that should have been higher, to be taken seriously, but she did not own anything higher. Considering sea folk customs, it was more than modest. Nesta would have to take her as she was. Nynaeve Almira did not go changing herself for anyone. The yellow opal pins stuck in her braid were her own, a present from the Panarch of Tarabon, no less. But Tylin had provided the gold necklace that fanned emeralds and pearls down to her bosom. A richer piece than she had ever dreamed of owning. A gift for bringing Matt, Tylin had called it, which made no sense at all, but maybe the queen thought she needed some excuse for such a valuable present. Both gold and ivory bracelets came from Avienda, who had a surprising little stock of jewelry for a woman who so seldom wore more than that one silver necklace. Nynaeve had asked to borrow that pretty roses-and-thorns ivory bracelet that the Aiel woman never wore. Surprisingly, Avienda had snatched it to her bosom as if it was her most precious possession, and of all things, Elaine began comforting her. Nynaeve would not have been surprised to see the pair fall weeping on one another's shoulder. There was something odd going on there, and if she had not known those two were too sensible for such nonsense, she would have suspected a man at the root of it. Well, Avienda was too sensible. Elaine did still yearn for Rand, though Nynaeve could hardly fault her for Suddenly she felt waves of Sidar almost atop her in huge amounts, and she floundered in salty water over her head, flailing upward to find air, tangled in her skirts, flailing. Her head broke surface, and she gasped for breath amid floating cushions, staring in astonishment. After a moment she recognized the slanting shape above her as one of the cabin seats and a bit of the cabin wall. She was inside a trapped pocket of air. Not large. She could have touched both sides without stretching her arms out fully. But how? An audible thud announced the bottom of the river. The upside-down cabin lurched, tilted. She thought the air pocket shrank a little. The first order of business before wondering about anything was getting out before she used up the air. She knew how to swim. She had splashed in the Waterwood ponds often enough back home. It was just when the water started rocking about her that she minded. Filling her lungs, she doubled over and swam down toward where the door must be, kicking awkwardly because of her skirts. It might help to shed the dress, but she was not about to bob to the surface of the river in nothing but shift and stockings and jewels. She was not about to leave those behind, either. Besides, she could not get out of the dress without losing her belt pouch, and she would drown before losing what was in there. The water was black, lightless. Her outstretched fingers struck wood, and she felt across the piercework carving until she found the door, scrabbled down the edge of that, and found a hinge. Muttering imprecations in her head, she cautiously felt her way to the other side. Yes! The latch handle! She lifted it, pushed outward. The door moved maybe 2 inches, and stopped. Lungs straining, she swam back up to the pocket, but only long enough to fill them again. This time, finding the door came faster. She stuck her fingers through the crack to find what held the door shut. They sank into mud. Maybe she could dig away a little hillock, or she felt higher, more mud. Increasingly frantic, she worked her fingers from the bottom of the crack to the top, and then refusing to believe from the top to the bottom. Mud. Solid, gooey mud all the way. This time, when she swam back up to the pocket, she grabbed hold of the edge of the seat above her and hung from it, panting, heart beating wildly. The air felt thicker. "I will not die here," she muttered. "I will not die here." She hammered a fist against the seat until she felt it bruise, fighting for the anger that would allow her to channel. She would not die. Not here. Alone. No one would know where she had died. No grave. Just a corpse rotting at the bottom of the river. Her arm fell with a splash. She labored for breath. Flecks of black and silver danced in her eyes. She seemed to be looking down a tube. No anger, she realized dimly. She kept trying to reach for Sidar, but without any belief that she would touch it now. She was going to die here after all. No hope, no Lan. And with hope gone, flickering on the edge of consciousness like a guttering candle flame, she did something she had never done before in her life. She surrendered completely. Sidar flowed into her, filled her. She was only half aware of the wood above her suddenly bulging outward, bursting. In rushing bubbles of air, she drifted up, out through the hole in the hull into darkness. Vaguely, she knew she should do something. She could almost remember what. Yes. Her feet kicked weakly. She tried to move her arms to swim. They seemed to just float. Something seized her dress, and panic roused her in thoughts of sharks and lionfish, and the light alone knew what else that might inhabit these black depths. A spark of consciousness spoke of the power, but she flailed desperately with fists and feet, felt her knuckles land solidly. Unfortunately, she also screamed, or tried to. A great quantity of water rushing down her throat washed away scream, Sidar, and very nearly her final scraps of awareness. Something tugged on her braid, then again, and she was being towed somewhere. She was no longer conscious enough to struggle, or even to be very much afraid of being eaten. Abruptly her head broke surface. Hands encircled her from behind. Hands, not a shark after all, squeezed hard against her ribs in a most familiar way. She coughed, water spewed from her nose, coughed again, painfully, and drew a shuddering breath. She had never tasted anything so sweet in her life. A hand cupped her chin, and suddenly she was being towed again. Lassitude washed through her. All she could do was float on her back and breathe and stare up at the sky. So blue, so beautiful. The stinging in her eyes was not all from the salty river. And then she was being pushed upward against the side of a boat, a rude hand beneath her bottom shoving her higher, until two lanky fellows with brass rings in their ears could reach down and haul her aboard. They helped her walk a step or two, but as soon as they let go to help her rescuer, her legs collapsed like towers of soggy mush. On unsteady hands and knees, she stared blankly at a sword and boots and green coat someone had thrown down on the deck. She opened her mouth and emptied herself of the river Elbar. The entire river, it seemed, plus her midday meal and her breakfast. It would not have surprised her at all to see a few fish, or her slippers. She was wiping her lips with the back of her hand when she became aware of voices. "My lord is all right. My lord was down for a very long time."
"Forget me, man," said a deep voice. "Get something to wrap around the lady."
Lan's voice, that she dreamed every night of hearing. Wide-eyed, Nynaeve barely bit back a wail. The horror she had felt when she thought she was going to die was nothing alongside what flashed through her now. Nothing. This was a nightmare. Not now. Not like this. Not when she was a drowned rat, kneeling with the contents of her stomach spread out before her. Without thought, she embraced Sidar and channeled. Water fell away from her clothes, her hair, in a rush, and washed all evidence of her little mishap out through a scupper-hole. Scrambling to her feet, she hurriedly pulled her necklace aright and did her best to straighten her dress and hair, but the soaking in salt water and then the rapid drying had left several stains on the silk, and a number of creases that would require a knowledgeable hand with a hot iron to remove. Wisps of hair wanted to fly away from her scalp, and the opals in her braid seemed to dot the bristling tail of an angry cat. It did not matter. She was calmness itself, cool as an early spring breeze, self-possessed as... She spun around before he could come on her from behind and startle her into disgracing herself completely. She only realized how quickly she had moved when she saw that Lan was just then taking his second step from the railing. He was the most beautiful man she had ever seen. Soaking wet in shirt and breeches and stockings, he was gorgeous, with his dripping hair clinging to the angles of his face, and a split purple bruise was rising on his face as from a blow. She clapped a hand to her mouth, remembering her fist connecting.
"Oh, no! Oh, Lan, I'm so sorry! I didn't mean to!"
She was not really aware of crossing the space between them. She was just there, stretching up on tiptoes to lay fingers gently on his injury. A deft weave of all five powers, and his tanned cheek was unblemished. But he might have been hurt elsewhere. She spun the weaves to delve him. New scars made her wince inside. And there was something odd, but he seemed healthy as a prime bull. He was also very wet from saving her. She dried him as she had herself. Water splashed around his feet. She could not stop touching him. Both hands traced his hard cheeks, his wonderful blue eyes, his strong nose, his firm lips, his ears. She combed that silky black hair into place with her fingers, adjusted the braided leather band that held it. Her tongue seemed to have a life of its own, too. "Oh, Lan," she murmured. "You really are here?" Somebody giggled. Not her. Nynaeve Almira did not giggle, but somebody did.
"It isn't a dream. Oh, Light, you're here. How?"
"A servant at the Tarasin Palace told me you'd gone to the river, and a fellow at the landing said what boat you had taken. If Mandarb hadn't lost a shoe, I would have been here yesterday."
"I don't care. You're here now. You're here.
She did not giggle. Maybe she is Aes Sedai, one of the boatmen murmured, not quite low enough, but I still say she's one duckling who means to stuff herself in that wolf's jaws.
Nynaeve's face flashed pure scarlet, and she snatched her hands to her sides, her heels thumping to the deck. Another time she would have given the fellow what for and no mistake. Another time, when she could think. Lan crowded everything else out of her head. She seized his arm. We can talk more privately in the cabin. Had one of the oarsmen snickered?
My sword, and
I'll bring it, she said, snatching up his things from the deck on flows of air. One of those louts had snickered. Another flow of air pulled open the cabin door, and she hustled Lan and his sword and the rest inside and slammed it behind them. Light! She doubted if even Callie Coplin back home had ever been as bold as this, and as many merchants' guards knew Callie's birthmark as knew her face. But it was not the same at all. Not at all. Still, no harm in being just a tad less eager. Her hands went back to his face, only to straighten his hair some more. Just that, and he caught her wrists gently in his big hands.
Mirella holds my bond now, he said quietly. She is lending me to you until you find a warder of your own.
Calmly pulling her right hand free, she slapped his face as hard as she could swing. His head hardly moved, so she freed the other hand and slapped him harder with that. How could you? For good measure, she punctuated the question with another slap. You knew I was waiting. One more seemed called for, just to drive the point home. How could you do such a thing? How could you let her? Another slap. Burn you, Lan Mandragoran! Burn you! Burn you! Burn you to the pit of doom! Burn you! The man, the bloody man, did not say one word. Not that he could, of course. What defense could he offer? He just stood there while she rained blows at him, making no move, unblinking eyes looking peculiar, as well they might with the way she reddened his cheeks for him. If her slaps made little impression on him, though, the palms of her hands began to sting like fury. Grimly she clenched a fist and punched him in the belly with all her might. He grunted, slightly. "We will talk this over calmly and rationally," she said, stepping back from him, "as adults." Lan just nodded and sat down and pulled his boots over to him. Pushing bits of hair out of her face with her left hand, she stuck the right behind her so she could flex her sore fingers without him seeing. He had no right being that hard, not when she wanted to hit him. Too much to hope she had cracked a rib in him.
"You should thank her, Nynaeve."
How could the man sound so calm? Stamping his foot firmly into one boot, he bent to pick up the other, not looking at her.
"You wouldn't want me bonded to you."
The flow of air seized a handful of his hair and bent his head up painfully. "If you dare, if you even dare, to spout that drivel about not wanting to give me a widow's weeds, Lan Mandragoran, I'll... She could not think of anything strong enough. Kicking him was not near enough. Mirella. Mirella and her warders. Burn him. Removing his hide in strips would not be enough. He might as well not have been bent over with his neck craned. He just rested his forearms across his knees and watched her with that odd look in his eyes and said,
"I thought about not telling you, but you have a right to know."
Even so, his tone became hesitant. Lan was never hesitant.
"When Moiraine died, when a warder's bond to his Aes Sedai is snapped, there are changes."
As he continued, her arms snaked around herself, hugging tightly to keep her from shivering. Her jaw ached, for she kept it clamped shut. She released the flow holding him as if a hand springing away released Sidar, but he only straightened and went on relating this horror without so much as a flinch, went on watching her. Suddenly she understood his eyes, colder than winter's heart, the eyes of a man who knew he was dead and could not make himself care, a man waiting, almost eager for that long sleep, her own eyes stung with not weeping.
"So you see," he concluded with a smile that touched only his mouth, an accepting smile, "when it's done, she will have a year or more of pain, and I will still be dead. You are spared that. My last gift to you, Mashiara."
Mashiara, his lost love.
"You are to be my warder until I find one?"
Her voice startled her with its levelness. She could not break down in tears now. She would not. Now, more than ever before, she had to gather all her strength.
"Yes," he said cautiously, tugging on his other boot.
He'd always seemed something of a half-tame wolf, and his eyes made him seem much less than half-tame now. "Good." Adjusting her skirts, she resisted the urge to cross the cabin to him. She could not let him see her fear. "Because I have found him. You. I waited and wished with Moiraine. I won't with Mirella. She is going to give me your bond." Mirella would if she had to drag the woman to Tar Valon and back by her hair. For that matter, she might drag her just for the principle of it. "Don't say anything," she said sharply when he opened his mouth. Her fingers brushed her belt pouch, where his heavy gold signet ring lay wrapped in a silk handkerchief. With an effort, she moderated her tone. He was ill, and harsh words never helped sickness. It was an effort, though. She wanted to berate him up one side and down the other, wanted to pull her braid out by the roots every time she thought of him and that woman. Fighting to keep her voice calm, she went on. "In the Two Rivers, Lan, when somebody gives another a ring, they are betrothed." That was a lie, and she half expected him to jump to his feet in outrage, but he only blinked warily. Besides, she had read about the notion in a story. "We have been betrothed long enough. We are going to be married today."
"I used to pray for that," he said softly,
then shook his head.
"You know why it can't be, Nynaeve. And even if it could, Mirella..."
Despite all her promises to keep her temper, to be gentle, she embraced Sidar and stuffed a gag of air into his mouth before he could confess what she did not want to hear. So long as he did not confess, she could pretend nothing had happened. When she got hold of Mirella, though... Opals pressed hard into her palm, and her hand leaped from her braid as if burned. She occupied her fingers with brushing his hair again, while he glared at her indignantly above his gaping mouth. "A small lesson for you in the difference between wives and other women," she said lightly. "Such a struggle. I would appreciate it very much if you did not mention Mirella's name again in my presence. Do you understand?" He nodded, and she released the flow. But as soon as he had worked his jaw a moment, he said,
"Naming no names, Nynaeve, you know she's aware of everything I feel through the bond. If we were man and wife..."
She thought her face might burst into flame. She had never thought of that. Bloody Mirella! "Is there any way to make sure she knows it is me?" she said finally, and her cheeks nearly did flash to fire. Especially when he fell back against the cabin wall, laughing in astonishment.
"Light, Nynaeve! You are a hawk! Light! I haven't laughed since..."
His mirth faded, the coldness that had dimmed in his eyes for an instant returning.
"I do wish it could be, Nynaeve, but..."
"It can and will," she broke in. "Men always seem to get the upper hand if you let them talk too long." She plumped herself down on his knees. They were not married yet, true, but he was softer than the unpadded benches on this boat. She shifted a bit to make herself more comfortable. Well, no harder than the benches, anyway. "You might as well reconcile yourself, Landman Dragoran. My heart belongs to you, and you've admitted yours belongs to me. You belong to me, and I will not let you go. You will be my warder and my husband, and for a very long time. I will not let you die. Do you understand that? I can be as stubborn as I have to be."
"I hadn't noticed," he said,
and her eyes narrowed. His tone sounded awfully dry. "As long as you do now," she said firmly. Twisting her neck, she peered through the piercework in the hull behind him, then craned around to peer through the carving at the front of the cabin. long stone docks thrusting out from the stone quay passed by. All she could see ahead were more docks, and the city gleaming white in the afternoon sun. "Where are we going?" she muttered.
"I told them to put us ashore as soon as I had you aboard," Lan said. "It seemed best to get off the river as fast as possible."
"You?" She clamped her teeth shut. He had not known where she was headed or why. He had done the best he could with what he did know, and he had saved her life.
"I can't go back to the city yet, Lan."
Clearing her throat, she changed her tone. However gentle she had to be with him, that much syrup would make her sick up all over again.
"I have to go to the sea folk ships, to Windrunner.
Much better. Light, but not too light, and firm."
"Nynaeve, I was right behind your boat. I saw what happened. You were 50 paces ahead of me and then 50 paces behind, sinking. It had to be balefire."
He did not need to say more. She said it for him, and with more knowledge than he had.
"Mogedion," she breathed.
Oh, it could have been another of the Forsaken, or one of the Black Aja, perhaps, but she knew. Well, she had beaten Mogedion not once, but twice. She could do so a third time, if necessary. Her face must not have shared her confidence.
"Don't be afraid," Lan said, touching her cheek. "Don't ever be afraid while I'm near. If you have to face Mogedion, I'll make sure you are angry enough to channel. I seem to have some talent in that direction."
"You'll never make me angry again," she began, and stopped, staring at him wide-eyed.
"I'm not angry," she said slowly.
"Not now, but when you need to be..."
"I'm not angry," she laughed. She kicked her feet in delight and pounded her fists on his chest, laughing. Sidar filled her, not just with life and joy, but this time with awe. With feathery flows of air, she stroked his cheeks.
"I am not angry, Lan," she whispered.
"Your block is gone."
He grinned, sharing her delight, but the grin put no warmth into his eyes.
"I will take care of you, Lan Mandragoran," she promised silently. "I will not let you die."
Leaning on his chest, she thought of kissing him, and even... "You are not Callie Coplin," she told herself firmly. A sudden horrible thought struck her, all the more horrible because it had not come earlier.
"The boatmen," she said quietly. "My bodyguards?"
Wordlessly he shook his head, and she sighed. Bodyguards. Like they had needed her protection, not the other way around. 4 more deaths to lay at Mogedion's feet. 4 on top of thousands, but these were personal as far as she was concerned. Well, she was not about to settle Mogedion this moment. Getting to her feet, she began seeing what she could do about her clothes.
"Lan, will you turn the boatmen around? Tell them to row for all they have."
As it was, she would not see the palace again before nightfall. "And find out if one of them has such a thing as a comb." She could not face Nesta like this. He picked up his coat and sword and gave her a bow.
"As you command, Aes Sedai."
Pursing her lips, she watched the door close behind him. Laughing at her, was he? She would wager someone on Windrunner could perform a marriage, and from what she had seen of the sea folk, she would wager Lan Mandragoran would find himself promising to do as he was told. They would see who laughed then. Lurching and rolling, the boat began to swing around, and her stomach lurched with it.
"Oh, light," she groaned, sinking onto the bench.
Why could she not have lost that along with her block? Holding Sidar, aware of every touch of the air on her skin, only made it worse. Letting go did not help. She was not going to sick up again. She was going to make Lan hers once and for all. This was going to be a wonderful day yet, if only she could stop feeling that storm was on the way. The sun sat luridly just above the rooftops by the time Elaine rapped on the door with her knuckles. Revelers danced and cavorted in the street behind her, filling the air with laughter and song and the scent of perfume. Idly, she wished she had had a chance really to enjoy the festival. A costume like Birgitta's might have been fun, or even one like that she had seen on the Lady Rissella, one of Tylan's attendants, first thing this morning, as long as she could have kept her mask on. She rapped again, harder. The gray-haired, square-jawed maid opened the door, fury suddenly painting her face when Elaine lowered her green mask. "You! What are you doing, Beck?" Fury turned to ghastly paleness as Marilla removed her mask, and Adelius and the others did the same. The woman jerked with each ageless face revealed, and even with Saritha's. By that time, maybe she saw what she expected to see. With a sudden cry, the maid tried to push the door shut, but Birgitta darted past Elaine, her feathered shoulder knocking it back open. The servant staggered a few steps, then gathered herself, but whether to run or shout, Birgitta was there before time, gripping her arm just below the shoulder. "Easy," Birgitta said firmly. "We don't want any fuss or shouting, now do we?" It did seem she was only holding the woman's arm, almost supporting her, but the maid stood very straight indeed and very still. Staring wide-eyed at her captor's plume-crested mask, she shook her head slowly. "What is your name?" Elaine asked, as everyone crowded into the entry hall behind her. The closing door muted the noise from outside. The maid's eyes darted from one face to the next, as if she could not bear to gaze at anyone for long.
Sidora.
"You will take us to Rihanna, Sidora." This time Sidora nodded. She looked about to cry. Sidora stiffly led the way upstairs, with Birgitta still holding her arm. Elaine considered telling her to release the woman, but the last thing she wanted was a shouted alarm, and everyone in the house fleeing in all directions. That was why Birgitta used muscle instead of Elaine herself channeling. She thought Sidora was more frightened than hurt, and everybody was to be at least a little frightened this evening.
In there,
Sidora said, nodding to a red door. The door to the room where Nynaeve and she had had that unfortunate interview. She opened it and went in. Rihanna was there, seated with the fireplace carved with the 13 sins at her back, and so were another dozen women Elaine had never seen before, occupying all of the chairs against the pale green walls, sweating with the windows tight and curtains drawn. Most wore ebudari dresses, though only one possessed the olive skin. Most had lines on their faces and at least a touch of grey, and every last woman of them could channel to one degree or another. Seven wore the red belt. She sighed in spite of herself. When Nynaeve was right, she let you know it until you wanted to scream. Rihanna bounded to her feet in the same red-faced fury Sidora had shown, and her first words were almost identical as well. "You! How dare you show your face!" Words and fury drained away together for the same reason, too, as Marilla and the others entered on Elaine's heels. A yellow-haired woman in red belt and plunging neckline made a faint sound as her eyes rolled up in her head and she slid bonelessly from her red chair. No one moved to help her. No one even glanced at Birgitta as she escorted Sidora to a corner and planted her there. No one seemed to breathe. Elaine felt a great desire to shout, "Boo!" just to see what would happen. Rihanna swayed, white-faced, and visibly tried to gather herself with slight success. It took her only a moment to scan the five cool-faced Aes Sedai lined up before the door and decide who must be in charge. She wobbled across the floor tiles to Marilla and sank to her knees, head bowed.
"Forgive us, Aes Sedai."
Her voice was worshipful, and only a little steadier than her knees had been. She babbled, in fact. "We are only a few friends. We have done nothing, certainly nothing to bring discredit to Aes Sedai. I swear that, whatever this girl has told you. We would have told you of her, but we were afraid. We only meet to talk. She has a friend, Aes Sedai. Did you catch her, too? I can describe her for you, Aes Sedai. Whatever you wish we will do, I swear we—" Marilla cleared her throat loudly.
"Your name is Rihanna Corley, I believe?"
Rihanna flinched and whispered that it was, still peering at the floor at the Grey Sister's feet.
"I fear you must address yourself to Elaine Sedai, Rihanna."
Rihanna's head jerked up in a most satisfactory way. She stared at Marilla, then by slow increments turned eyes as big as her face to Elaine. She licked her lips. She drew a deep, long breath.
Twisting around on her knees to face Elaine, she bowed her head once more.
"I beg your forgiveness, Aes Sedai," she said leadenly. "I did not know. I could not—"
Another long, hopeless breath.
"Whatever punishment you decree, we accept humbly, of course. But please, I beg you to believe that—"
"Oh, stand up!" Elaine broke in impatiently. She had wanted to make this woman acknowledge her as much as she had Marilla or any of the others, but the groveling sickened her.
"That's right. Stand on your feet."
She waited until Rihanna complied, then walked over and sat in the woman's chair. There was no need for cringing, but she wanted no doubts who was in charge.
"Do you still deny knowledge of the Bowl of the Winds, Rihanna?"
Rihanna spread her hands.
"Aes Sedai," she said guilelessly, "none of us would ever use a Turangreal, much less an Angreal or Saangreal."
Guileless and wary as a fox in a city.
"I assure you we make no pretense of being anything even near to Aes Sedai. We are just these few friends, you see, tied together by once having been allowed to enter the White Tower. That is all."
"Just these few friends," Elaine said dryly over steepled fingers.
"And Garinia, of course, and Berowen, and Doris, and Elise."
"Yes," Rihanna said reluctantly.
"And them?"
Elaine shook her head very slowly.
"Rihanna, the White Tower knows about your kin. The Tower has always known."
A dark woman with a Tyran look to her, though wearing a blue and white silk vest with the sigil of the Goldsmiths' Guild, gave a strangled scream and pressed both plump hands to her mouth. A lean, graying Saldaean wearing the red belt crumpled with a sigh to join the yellow-haired woman on the floor, and two more swayed as if they might. For her part, Rihanna looked at the sisters in front of the door for confirmation and saw it, as she thought. Marilla's face was more icy than serene, and Saritha grimaced before she could stop herself. Vandine and Karianna were both tight-lipped, and even Adelius seemed included, turning her head this way and that to study the women along the walls as she might have insects previously unknown to her. Of course, what Rihanna saw and what was were not the same. They had all accepted Elaine's decision, but no amount of "yes, Elaine" could make them like it. They would have been here 2 hours ago if not for a great deal of "but Elaine" tossed in. Sometimes leading meant herding. Rihanna did not faint, but fear filled her face, and she raised pleading hands.
"Do you mean to destroy the kin? Why now, after so long? What have we done that you should come down on us now?"
"No one will destroy you," Elaine told her. "Karianna, since nobody else is going to help those two, would you, please?" Jumps and blushes ran around the room, and before Karianna could move, two women were crouching over each one who had fainted, lifting her up and waving smelling salts under her nose. "The Ammerlin seat desires every woman who can channel to be connected to the tower," Elaine went on. "The offer is open to any of the kin who wish to accept." Had she woven flows of air around every one of those women, she could not have frozen them more still. Had she squeezed those flows tight, she could not have produced more bulging eyes. One of the women who had fainted suddenly gasped and coughed, pushing away the tiny vial of salts that had been held still too long. That broke everyone free in a deluge of voices.
"We can become Aes Sedai after all?"
the Tyran in the goldsmith's vest asked excitedly, at the same time that a round-faced woman with a red belt at least twice as long as anyone else's burst out with,
"They will let us learn! They will teach us again!"
A deluge of painfully eager voices.
"We can really—"
and
"They will let us!"
from every side. Rihanna rounded on them fiercely.
"Ivara, Sumeko, all of you, you forget yourselves! You speak in front of Aes Sedai. You speak in front of Aes Sedai."
She passed a hand over her face, trembling. An embarrassed silence descended. Eyes fell and blushes rose. With all those lined faces, all that gray and white hair, Elaine still was minded of nothing so much as a group of novices having a pillow fight after last had told, when the mistress of novices walked in. Hesitantly, Rihanna looked at her across her fingertips. "We truly will be allowed to return to the tower," she mumbled into her hand. Elaine nodded. "Those who can learn to become Aes Sedai will have the chance, and there will be a place for all. For any woman who can channel." Unshed tears shone in Rihanna's eyes. Elaine was not sure, but she thought the woman whispered, "I can be green." It was hard not to rush over and throw her arms around her. None of the other Aes Sedai showed any signs of giving way to emotion, and Mirrilla certainly was of sterner stuff. "If I may ask a question, Elaine. Rihanna, how many of you will we be taking in?" Doubtless that pause covered a change from "how many wilders and failures?" If Rihanna noticed or suspected, she ignored it or did not care. "I cannot believe there are any who would refuse the offer," she said breathlessly. "It may take some time to send word to everyone. We remain spread out, you see, so..." She laughed, a touch nervously and still not far from tears. "So Aes Sedai would not notice us. At present there are 1,783 names on the roll." Most Aes Sedai learned to cover shock with an outward show of calm, and only Saritha allowed her eyes to widen. She also mouthed silent words, but Elaine knew her well enough to read her lips. 2,000 wilders, light help us. Elaine made a great show of adjusting her skirts until she was sure her own face was under control. Light help them indeed. Rihanna misunderstood the silence. "You expected more? Accidents do take some every year, or natural deaths, as with everyone else, and I fear the kin have grown fewer in the last 1,000 years. Perhaps we have been too cautious in approaching women when they leave the White Tower, but there has always been the fear that one of them might report being questioned, and... "We are not disappointed in the least," Elaine assured her, making soothing gestures. "Disappointed?" She very nearly giggled hysterically. "There were nearly twice as many kinswomen as there were Aes Sedai." Egwene could never say she had not done her part to bring women who could channel to the tower. But if the kin refused wilders, she must stick to the point. Conscripting the kin had only been incidental. "Rihanna," she said gently, "do you think perhaps you might happen to recall where the Bowl of the Winds is now?" Rihanna blushed a sunset. "We've never touched them," Elaine said. I don't know why they were gathered. I've never heard of this Bowl of the Winds, but there is a storeroom such as you describe over..." Below stairs a woman channeled briefly. Someone screamed in purest terror. Elaine was on her feet in a flash, as were they all. From somewhere in that feathered dress, Birgitta produced a dagger. "That must have been Darys," Rihanna said. "She's the only other one here." Elaine darted forward and caught her arm as she started for the door. "You aren't green yet," she murmured, and was rewarded with a lovely dimpled smile, surprised and pleased and diffident all at once. "We will handle this, Rihanna." Mirrilla and the others arrayed themselves to either side, ready to follow Elaine out, but Birgitta was at the door before any of them, grinning as she put hand to latch. Elaine swallowed and said nothing. That was the warder's honor, so the Gaidine said. First to go in, last to come out. But she still filled herself with Sidar, ready to crush anything that threatened her warder. The door opened before Birgitta could lift the latch. Matt sauntered in, pushing the slender maid Elaine remembered ahead of him. "I thought you might be here." He grinned insolently, ignoring Darice's glares, and went on. "When I found a bloody great lot of warders drinking at my least favorite tavern, I've just come back from following a woman to the Rahad, to the top floor of a house with nobody living on it, to be precise. After she left, the floor was so dusty I could see right away which room she'd gone to. There's a flaming big rusted lock on the door, but I'll bet 1,000 crowns to a kick in the bottom your bold is behind it." Darice aimed a kick at him, and he pushed her away, pulling a small knife from his belt to bounce on his palm.
Will one of you tell this wildcat watchdog whose side I'm on? Women with knives make me uneasy these days.
We already know all about that, Matt, Elaine said.
Well, they had been just about to learn all about it, and the stunned look on his face was priceless. She felt something from Birgitta. The other woman gazed at her without any particular expression, but that little knot of emotion in the back of Elaine's head radiated disapproval. Avienda probably would not think much of it either. Opening her mouth was one of the most difficult things Elaine had ever done.
I must thank you, though, Matt. It is entirely due to you that we have found what we were looking for.
His gaping astonishment was almost worth the agony. He closed his mouth quickly, though opening it again to say, "Then let's hire a boat and fetch this bloody bowl. With any luck, we can leave Ebu Dar tonight."
"That is ridiculous, Matt, and don't tell me I'm demeaning you. We are not crawling about the Rahad in the dark, and we are not leaving Ebu Dar until we have used the bowl."
He tried to argue, of course, but Doris took the opportunity of his attention being elsewhere to try kicking him again. He dodged around Birgitta, yelping for somebody to help him, while the slender woman darted after him.
"He is your warder, Elaine Sedai?" Rihanna asked doubtfully.
"Light, no, Birgitta is."
Rihanna's mouth fell open. Having answered a question, Elaine asked one, a question she could not have brought herself to ask another sister.
"Rihanna, if you don't mind telling me, how old are you?"
The woman hesitated, glancing at Matt, but he was still dodging to keep a grinning Birgitta between him and Doris.
"My next naming day," Rihanna said, as if it was the most ordinary thing in the world, "will be my 412th.
Marilla fainted dead away.